My today's talk, I want to make a kind of short remark. It will take a couple of minutes. Yesterday, after my lecture, I talked to a student, and this conversation reminded me of a joke. You know, let me tell you the joke. That back in the 80s, when Soviet Union was still in existence, they were still there. People there, they were obsessed with secrecy. And there is a legend which says that once upon a time a famous theoretical physicist invented or discovered or derived a great formula for something new, and he was very happy and very proud of this formula, this equation, and he was telling to everybody that I have derived a great equation, I'm going to publish it in Physical Review Letters. And a few days he was summoned to a local KGB office, and the KGB officer told him, "We heard already that you derived a great formula, and we had a close look at this formula, and we decided that the right hand side might have some relevance to some military applications, so we have to classify it right away. But you still can publish your left hand side." So, upon talking to the student, I realized that maybe I made two points which were not kind of crystally clear, and they were sort of remained sort of a little classified in my yesterday talk. And so, I want to correct this very quickly. It will take me 1 minute. First of all, when I said that in the past, the string parameter is M star, I meant that there may or may not be major occurrences of the gravitons and gravitinas spaced at M star. So mg squared prime minus mg squared m star squared. But in no way I imply, of course, that there are major recurrences of the standard model particle spaced at that interval. So there is no excited electron whose mass squared differs from the electron mass by m star squared. Were it the case, it would be, of course, total disaster, absolutely ruled out by experiment. So if there is a kind of string theory which lies behind the whole construction, it has to be very peculiar, because the regular occurrences of standard model particles, if they are there, they should be spaced by large mass interval rather than m star. And the second point, which I didn't make crystal clear as it came out in the conversation, I just probably should have reminded how the Bremsstrahlung works. Let's take the ordinary Bremsstrahlung of the photon. Let's say you have electron, positron scattering, and then you emit a photon, which you don't detect for some reasons. Then you may ask you how the cross, what is the correction to the Born cross-section due to the Bremsstrahlung, and I just remind it's very well known, the correction is of order alpha times logarithm times the electron mass divided by delta p, where delta p is your characteristic energy or momentum resolution in the process. So if the resolution is not very good of order of the electron mass itself, this is a small correction. However, should you grow to delta p very small, in fact, exponentially small, if delta p were of order e to the power 1 over alpha, then, of course, this would be a huge correction. Right? And we know that that's how Bremsstrahlung works. In our case, when I had instead of the photon, we have this graviton which can propagate in the bulk, of course, the coupling constant is dimensionful, and the Bremsstrahlung correction is governed by a power rather than a logarithm, and the power is very easy to understand. It's R sub C times delta P squared. Delta P is again the resolution, and R sub C, I remind you, the parameter which appears in the green function of this photon. The green function was a P squared plus P divided by R sub plus P M star cube. times star cube. And the ratio R sub C was mt squared divided by m star cube, which was very large, typically of order of the universe size. So if we were able to measure energies on our brain, of the scattered particle on our brain with very high resolution, for very small momentum, the emission of this photon into extra dimension is disastrous. It's very large. However, of course, we cannot have this resolution where delta P cannot be of order of the Compton wave, inverse Compton wave of the universe. So in every realistic process, you, of course, smear all over your energy resolution. And only at very small momentum, you modify you have a huge emission. At larger momentum, you have not a huge emission. You have a suppressed emission. And when you smear over the phase space, you get the correction on this side. For all realistic delta P, this is, of course, not measured. But, of course, if you have a huge microscopic object like a star, when you have very small cross-sections of individual emissions, but many, many emissions which occur macroscopically, you have to bother that the size of the star might overcome the smallness of this emission. So that's how the limitations are obtained. Okay, I think now there should be... I sort of declassified the right-hand side of the equation. And I proceed to the main subject of my talk, which is kind of very simple today, sort of interesting, just I like it very much. That's the title of my talk, and the authors, the official title is the molecular effects in our brain work from extra dimensions, but I maybe should call it monopoles and cosmic streams, windows to extra dimensions. So the main assertion or the main statement I'm going to make today is that in brain world scenarios, mainly of the, I will be concerned today with the ED type and other similar scenarios, there are new types of topological defects which are, from the point of view of four dimensions, look like cosmic strings or monopoles or similar defects. And if we find one and approach one in the core of the defect, it's an efficient window to extra dimension. When we put something, a probe in the core of the defect, we are effectively in the smeared all over extra dimensions, and we can perceive very efficient extra dimensional physics. We don't need, in this sense, I mean, in this type of construction, we don't need accelerators in order to probe extra dimensions. The most efficient way would be to find either this type of cosmic stream or monopole and do measurements near the core of this object. And we will know everything about extra dimensions. So let me outline the formulation of the problem more specifically. I'm not going to consider scenarios of the random Sundrum type. The gravity in the extra space will never be strong. It may play a role, but it will be kind of a weak effect. And therefore, I may assume that at least approximately a multidimensional space is a direct product of our four-dimensional space times R, K, where K is some manifold which stretches in the extra dimensions. Okay, so now the basic idea is that our world is a brain which presents a topological defect on K. And all standard, again, like as tomorrow, all standard particles are assumed to be confined on K, to be limited to K. Gravity, of course, may propagate, but as I said today, gravity will play, it will play an auxiliary role, but it will never be the determining force in my construction. Okay, now what is important to me, I'm going to consider the case when K by itself is topologically non-trivial. For instance, if you consider a very simplistic example,
our world is M4 times S1, it's one compact four dimension. Then there is a non-contractible cycle on S, so that of course by one of S1 is. But of course you understand that you don't have to consider K to be S1 in order to have a non-contractible cycle. K can be something more complicated, for instance a torus, in which case there will be a few non-contractible cycles, or even something more complicated. But I will assume what is important to me, I will assume that various topological invariants on K are non-trivial. So phi I of K not equal a non-trivial for I equal 1, 2, or 3. So one of the homotopy classes is non-trivial. In case of pi 1, there should be non-contractible cycle. An example for pi 2 non-trivial would be if K is S2. If K is S2, then of course pi 2 of S2 is also here. That's topologically non-trivial. But again, this is the simplest possibility. You can think of more complicated extra spatial manifolds. What is important that it is non-trivial. In order to have a domain wall on such manifolds, we have to have, and if I'm trying to work in the context of field theory with no reference to string theory, therefore, for my purpose, the topological defects on which we live, it's not a brain, it's rather a domain wall, and in order to build a domain wall, you of course have to have the target space of your fields, which also is topologically non-trivial. I will explain this later on. Then, in principle, we have a mapping of K into T into the target space, which is characterized by some number of moduli. And the number of moduli is a dynamical question. It definitely exceeds the number of broken isometries, but it may be larger than that. And moreover, in this situation, the topology of the moduli space is also typically non-trivial. So as we'll see, the combination of these properties will lead to the occurrence of the new topological defects of the new type. I will call them very loosely Kaluza-Klein topological defects. Let's say Kaluza-Klein cosmic string or Kaluza-Klein monopole, although I should emphasize that it's not what such type of topological defects are impossible in the standard Kaluza-Klein feature. It's only possible if you have a brain, a domain wall on a manifold. So let me explain the basic ideas. As I said, the idea is very general, but I find it pedagogically convenient to explain this basic idea in the simplest possible case, namely, which is may not be very realistic because we know that one per dimension is not a very realistic case. I only take it for the purpose of pedagogical explanation because everything becomes very simple and very clear in this picture, and then you may replace S1 by some more complicated manifold with a non-contractible cycle, of course. Okay, but let me start with S1. Now I consider Phi1 non-trivial, so the objects I will be dealing with may be called Kaluza-Klein cosmic. I will be referred to them as Kaluza-Klein cosmic strings. So let us consider the structure of the extra-dimensional space. It's cylindrical, so this direction represents our four-dimensional world. And this direction is a compact extra-spatial spatial manifold, which is here taken to be S1. Now I assume that the domain wall forms, which stretches in our four-dimensional world. This is our four-dimensional world, represented here only by one dimension because it's hard to draw otherwise. And all standard model particles are confined to this domain wall, and later on I will give an example. You see, it's a little tricky. It's not a standard domain wall, because usually the domain wall, what does a domain wall say in solid-state physics? It's a domain in the space which separates two distinct phases.
There is another parameter which can take, say, two, for instance, two, maybe more than two, but some two discrete values, and the domain wall separates two areas in space. In one area, the other parameter takes one value, in another area, the other parameter takes another value. You see that for Kokov manifold, this doesn't work because it cannot separate two distinct values of the other parameters because I can continuously interpolate from one side of the wall to the other side of the wall on the other side of the extra spatial coordinate. So I have to consider wall anti wall, which is possible but not so interesting, or I have to invent something else, and I will explain to you later on that it's easy to invent something else which replaces the notion of a domain wall on a non-compact manifold. So far, let us take very pragmatically, this is a domain where the vacuum energy density is larger than here or here, and that all standard model fields have zero modes, which are confined in the perpendicular direction, which are well converging in the perpendicular direction, and that's from what we are all now, the thickness of the brain is a dynamical parameter. We assume it to be much less than the size of the manifold, again, for simplicity and in order to be graphic. Then the position of the domain wall on this extra spatial coordinate represents a point, the center. Let's say you can think of the domain wall as being very thin, or not very thin, but then you can define its center in the perpendicular direction at the center. Let me call it, say, let's say this coordinate is y, so the center of the domain wall y naught, and if the domain wall, static domain wall, is characterized by the position y naught. However, in principle, from your point of view of low energy observer, we reach the domain wall y naught. In principle, is a dynamical parameter which can slowly depend on the position of the wall. The wall can be bent, slightly, or a wave can be propagated along the wall. There are cold strong models, which are long wave modes of the position. Okay, and so the propagation of this cold strong mode will be perceived, if we could view from the outside, as the some weak dependence of y naught of our coordinate, t and x mu. Okay? So this is a small perturbation. If we punch a little bit or push a little bit the position of the wall, it has a certain tension. Tension doesn't like the wall to be non-flat. It wants to make it flat again. So there will be a wave which will propagate, which will carry the perturbation of the flatness of the wall. But this is a plane wave. This is an effect which can be seen in the perturbation theory. Now I'm going to explain what kind of topological defects in four dimensions one might see if one goes outside the perturbation theory. First of all, observe that the position, why not, of the domain wall breaks spontaneously the translational invariance in the perpendicular direction. Here, because it's a manifold, it's better to speak about isometries in general when it's a more complicated but somehow symmetric manifold. It has isometries, which are kind of seen to replace translational invariance, and then if you put the domain wall at a certain point, you break this. This breaking acts, I mean, responding to there is a zero mode. I mean, every breaking generates a gold stone. This gold stone couples with the gravifortov, which becomes thus mass. Okay, so unlike the original Kaluza Klein picture, if you have a domain wall on the manifold, you don't have to bother about gravifortovs because they become massive at the cup. But this is a side remark. What is important, you see, that the coordinate y naught, because this manifold is compact, here it is S1, is a kind of coordinate of an angle type. Okay? So we have something which is suspiciously similar to a Bricossov string. We have U1 symmetry, which is an isometry of this circle.
which is spontaneously broken by the position of the volant, the corresponding dual field, which is the graviton, becomes mass in the Higgs mechanism. And in this Higgs mechanism, the corresponding goldstone is eternal. There is no goldstone more because it pairs up with the graviton, which becomes mass. That's exactly, reminds very strongly of what we might think to forget about extra dimensions, but just have this theory of superconductivity. You remember the theory of superconductivity, there is U1, electromagnetic U1 symmetry, there is a photon which is originally massless, and then there is a charged order parameter, which is the density of the Cooper pairs, which gets a vacuum expectation value. This vacuum expectation value breaks this U1. The corresponding Goldstone boson is getting eaten up by the photon. The photon becomes massive, but as a remnant of the whole story, there is a possibility of having a topological defect, which is in a precursor vortex. Right? So absolutely the same story. Now we don't have original electromagnetism, we have all the geometry of our extra space, but in essence, from the point of view of the fourth dimensional observer, everything works as if we have the standard of precursor vortex, even though we don't want. The only assumption which goes into it, in fact, there are two assumptions. First of all, that you have a domain wall form, so that our world is just a four-dimensional slice of the multi-dimensional world. And second, you have to assume that phi one of this extra of k is z. Okay? So you have to have at least one non-contractional cycle in this manifold. Here it's S1 is the simplest example. Now how do we see it? Well, by analogy, we're already convinced that we already know that the precursor vortex will be formed, which is cosmic string in the given context. But we can see it a little bit more transparent way. Let's single out an axis, and let's say that this cosmic string lies is situated along the. Well, it's not very good that I wrote y, because y is my particular coordinate. Let's say this is x1, and this is x2, this is x3. So I single out the axis x2, and I put the core of the cosmic string aligned along this x2. Now I draw a large circle in the perpendicular plane, very far away from the core, okay, in our space. And I see what happens if I go smoothly around this core. Let me say that I consider the topological defect of the multidimensional world of the following type. As I said, in principle, this coordinate, why not, the position of the center, can slowly depend on our four-dimensional coordinate. So as I go very slowly along the large circle in the perpendicular plane, this is our four-dimensional world, 3-hour spatial coordinates plus time. I go along the large circle. What happens with the domain wall, the center of the domain wall, it goes slowly along the extra dimension and completes exactly one rotation when I come here. So the rotation of the position of the center of the domain wall is correlated with the rotation of along the circle in our space. This is kind of entangled topology. Topology of our space gets entangled with the non-trivial topology in the extra space. I'm sure that string theory people in some abstract way deal with such configurations over time. But here I prefer to stay in the context of the field theory, and it's a very clear example that it's possible. But it's not so interesting. The fact that it's possible is, first of all, it's rather evident, and second of all, as I said, that probably many people knew that it's possible, because many people speak about strings winding around various compact manifolds. So the very fact of existence of such configurations is not the biggest interesting finding here. Okay, What is really interesting here, and I will explain it in more detail in the second, in the next two transparencies, that usually, let's remember what happens with the abricosal vortices. You remember that if you go inside the core of the abricot, you want symmetry spontaneously broken far away from the core of the abricosal vortices. The other parameter is some finite number. However, if you go inside, deeper and deeper inside the core and approach the center of the vortex, you remember that the other parameter necessarily vanishes. That's the condition of continuity of fields and finiteness of energy. You cannot have the other parameter non-vanishing right in the middle of the abricosal vortex, because then the tension of such vortex would be infinite, and it tends to minimize itself, and we know that the minimum exists, but we know that it exists exactly. The existence of the finite minimum of the tension of the abricosal vortex implies that exactly in the middle of the vortex, the other parameter vanishes. Okay? So now I am interested. I have proven that the Kaluza-Klein cosmic string exists from general topological arguments by drawing a large circle away from the axis, but now I'm approaching, I'm going in the perpendicular plane towards the axis, towards the core of the effects, and I ask myself what should happen in this case. Now it's a little trickier, it's a little bit trickier than in the abricosal vortex, because in the abricosal vortex, in principle, the other parameter is characterized by its phase and its modulus, its absolute value, and it's the absolute value of the other parameter which vanishes in the core of the defect, which leads to the restoration of U1C. Here we have only, instead of the other parameter, I have only the position of my brain world, or my domain world in the perpendicular dimension. It's the angle parameter. There is no analog of the modulus parameter. So what should happen somehow on physical grounds, it's clear that this angle should totally delocalize. Quantum mechanically, this means that if the domain wall is well defined, when we are in the position of the domain wall on K is well defined, when we're far away from the core of the cosmic string, as we approach the position of the cosmic string, domain wall, but its excitation, because it's necessarily excited in the core of the string, should somehow totally delocalize itself on the surface of the cylinder. There should be no preferred. Why not should lose its sense? So, dynamically, it happens as follows. Here I give the picture, and in the next transparency, I present some formula illustrating this picture, this graphic plot. So, what happens? When we're far away from the cosmic string, I said that the energy is localized in a thin layer, which is our domain wall. The thickness of the layer depends on the dynamical parameters, and also it depends, turns out to be dependent on the distance to the core of a cosmic string. If you try to write a field configuration which provides for finite tension of the cosmic string, then you will notice, and I will explain how this happens in particular expressions of the next transparency, that as you approach the core of the string in our world, so that's the string, I'm coming closer in our world. What happens simultaneously when I come closer and closer in our world, the thickness of the brain of which I read becomes thicker and thicker in the field direction. So this is a series of pictures which demonstrate the phenomenon. When I was far away from the cosmic string, my brain was very thin in the perpendicular direction. I approached the core of the string, this is the perpendicular direction, that's not our goal. The domain wall becomes thicker, and exactly in the middle of this defect of the cosmic string, the thickness of the brain becomes equal to the size of the extra dimension, so it totally delocalizes in the extra dimension. Whatever was trapped on this domain wall now become also delocalized in the extra dimension and spans the entire extra dimension. So when I approach establish the core of this topological defect in our world, simultaneously, I totally delocalize our particles in the extra dimension. And if I'm able to penetrate right in the middle of the cosmic string, I'm simultaneously penetrating in the extra dimensions.
But question, all the physics is weakly coupled still?
Excuse me?
The physics is still weakly coupled in the region?
Well, it depends. You know, I'm working, depends on that particular dynamical realization. I'm trying to work to always to have in front of me some field theoretic example, which is weakly field theory, which is weakly coupled, so it can be treated quasi-classically. Okay? So I will show you this example of this transparency. And in this example, everything happens exactly in the way which I demonstrated pictorially. But then, because I think it's a total topological property of the whole construction, I believe that even if you go beyond weak coupling and even beyond field theory, geometric structure should remain. The main conclusion of delocalization inside the KK defect should survive anything.
My point was that in string theory, you decompactify some dimensions if you go to strong coupling. I mean, the relation between, for example, type 2A and M theory, I mean, the 11th dimension decompactifies, the 11th dimension is proportional to the coupling. So. And there are other examples.
Maybe that's the same phenomenon. It's hard for me to say at the moment. We can discuss it with you later if you want, but
could be that what happens is that the radius gets. Is another way you could even, if you got near the core, could be that the radius gets goes to zero? What's that actually?
No. Extra dimension stays intact. It's just the position of the width, the thickness of the domain wall becomes larger and larger. Here is the particular field theoretic implementation. It's a very simple model. I want just to show how it works. Okay. So first of all, I have to explain you. I told you that my extra dimension K was compact. Okay. So I have to build a domain wall which is not the standard domain wall separating two phases. I have somehow to build a domain wall which is defined as a domain wall and compact and compact manifold. It can be done in many different ways. The simplest example, I think it's one of probably the simplest example, is as follows. Let's assume that we are working in the field theory, and that's always the case. I try to work in the weakly coupled field theory in order to have very simple implementation of the pattern in front of my eyes, and then later on it's possible to proceed from, presumably possible to proceed to more complicated implementations. So we work in the field theory. And then I have to say that my target space, which is the field, I have the field phi, and I have to say that the field, my target space is also present in a non-contractible cycle. That is to say that my field phi is an angle variable. Phi varies from 0 to 2 pi. Okay. Then, in principle, I have my manifold K1, which is S, K, which is S1, which is kind of parameterization for the angle, and I map this onto my target space, on the space of fields, which is phi. So phi, I consider matching phi or y naught. Y naught is the position of the S1, which is K, and phi is my angle here. Okay? Let's assume, of course, because phi is the angle variable, I don't need to consider only trivial mappings, and moreover, it's very advisable to consider non-trivial mappings when I start at some y naught, which is called minus L minus 2, at some point I start at 0, and then as I go around k and approach the very same point from the other side, I come to phi equal to 2 pi. This is also a physically acceptable configuration, because you see my potential, which is here, is 2 pi periodic, so phi equal to 0 and phi equal to 2 pi is one and the same point. Okay? However, because the potential is non-flat, this solution of the classical equation of motion, which minimizes the energy of the configuration, is also not homogeneous in this y naught. Because the potential is big, at a certain point it's energetically advantageous for the system to stay near the minimum for a long time, then very quickly switch to 2π and stay near 2π. So this is the mapping of phi. This is what is drawn here as the plot of phi of y. Okay. For the given coupling, for the given constant C and for the given value beta, the thickness of this domain wall is regulated by this parameter beta. If you, I assume that beta is less than 1, but not much less than 1, rather close to 1, that if beta is rather close to 1, then the maximum, the potential is very high, and it's energetically advantageous to switch from 0 to 2π very quickly. The higher the potential, the quicker the transition. Okay, because the system doesn't want to live in the point where the potential is high. It wants to live in the point where the potential is low. Okay, so the thickness is regulated by this parameter. Of course, also there is the issue for this mapping to exist, for the to exist exactly the solution of equation of motion, this parameter C has to be quantized. That's because this is the solution by the way, the exact solution of the equation of motion for this particular potential. And it's clear to see, it's clear why I have chosen this potential, just because this is an explicit analytic solution with which it's very easy to deal with. And you see what happens. Then y changes from y minus y naught changes from minus l over 2 to 1 over to l over 2. Phi changes by 2π. Okay, this part doesn't change. There is a jump in this part, and it is compensated by the jump in this part. It only is possible for the quantized value of the parameter C. Now we might ask ourselves, this is the solution of the equation of motion. Now we might ask ourselves what happens as we, this is far away from the core of the string. Now, okay, another plot to show. This is the energy density distribution for the solution I have shown on the previous transparency. And you see it's strongly fit near the center of the wall, as it should, because the wall should localize everything, the energy should peak. As I said, the thickness here is regulated by the parameter beta. Beta, if beta is arbitrarily close to 1, the thickness is arbitrarily small. So the wall becomes narrow and narrow. Now what happens as I go to the towards the core of the string, just like in the Abrikosov string, as I go towards the core of the string, the modulus doesn't satisfy classical equation, and it's not vacuum, it's not at the vacuum configuration, right? I mean, you have to leave the vacuum and not for the smoothness of the solution. So what happens actually here is that the solution, but topology cannot be continuously changed. So the fact that as you circle around K, you're in the target space, your field phi changes by 2π, cannot be changed. You cannot change the topology. But you can change the form of the function because you are not constrained anymore by saying that you are in the vacuum configuration. So now it's easy to see by developing a series of steps. If you approach the core of the string, what happens? The mapping, which was presented on the previous page, evolves continuously into the mapping of this time. You see this mapping? The sign term here will disappear. So this is a homogeneous mapping, right? Topology is preserved because if y minus y naught changes from the minus l over 2 to l over 2, the left-hand side jumps by 2π, and the right-hand side jumps by 2π. So we didn't screw up the topology of the mapping, but dynamically we proceeded. It's the mapping from the very same class, but it's a different mapping. If you now calculate the energy density for this mapping, you see that it's flat, because it's a homogeneous mapping, and the very notion of why not loses its sense, because why not is not observable. Everything is flat. That's the energy distribution on the cylinder. in the perpendicular dimension. It is flat, but there is no domain wall. It totally delocalized itself in the perpendicular direction, 100%. So if we previously dealt with zero modes trapped on the wall, far away from the core of the cosmic string, the zero modes are trapped on the wall and have the thickness of order of the thickness of the wall themselves. So everything was localized on the wall. Now the localization, the degree of localization is none. Because for this background field configuration, whatever zero modes you draw, they have the very same thickness. So they are totally localized in the extra dimension. Now, what does it mean? This is a very simple realization, very simple field theoretic, quasi-classical weak coupling realization of the phenomenon. And in this particular model, you can trace everything step by step, even analytically. You don't have to do any numerical calculations, but I'm pretty sure, because the essence of the phenomenon is basically of the, there are two things, topology and continuity, that you don't allow infinite energy configurations. I'm pretty sure that the very same thing should happen in any type of realization. And whenever you have a domain wall, and you have this on a monopole with non-contractable cycle, when you come inside the core of this domain wall, everything delocalizes in the extra dimension. Now, what are the physical consequences of this decolonization? The physical... Okay. Here is the plot of how this whole construction looks. There is this cosmic string I was speaking about. Of course, physically, it cannot be infinite as well. It may be pretty large. It should end on monopole and, of course, KK monopole and KK anti-monopole, which are the endpoints of the string. Let's assume that such an object exists somewhere in space. We have to find it, and then we send a cosmic traveler towards the core, and the cosmic traveler starts making measurements. Now, what might be the most spectacular signature of this phenomenon? It depends, of course, on the model of our world, and frankly speaking, brain world scenarios, the investigations of the brain world scenarios were heavily tilted towards the gravity side and are not so abundant on the flavor physics and standard model physics side. But still, we can try to, there are quite a few works on this issue, and we can try to generalize, to extract some common features. First of all, for instance, one of the common features of the flavor physics in the brain world scenarios is that you have to, for instance, to forget, empirically, that flavor changing transitions are forbidden in our world, strongly suppressed in our world. Neutral current, for instance, flavor changing neutral current, say mu doesn't go to E, although energetically mu muon could have emitted a photon and become an electron. Nothing forbids it, but dynamically we know this doesn't happen to incredibly high precision. So usually these problems, the problems of this type, and there are other empiric facts of this type, but usually they are solved in those not very abundant papers, but still those papers which address the issue of flavor physics of the brain world scenarios by geometrically separating either three generations. These are the so-called flat brains or multiple brains, and I should refer to flat brain was introduced in the works of Schmaltz and collaborators, and a little bit later we will discuss multiple brains, but the idea is very similar, that you either separate geometrically, you say that your, say, flat brain has a substructure, and say it's like a sandwich, and say if leptons of one type live on the other side of the sandwich, and leptons of the other type live inside the brain or towards the other side of the sandwich, so that the overlap between the zero modes and the perpendicular direction is for some reasons is small. The most extreme realization of this idea, I believe, was given in my paper with Vladi, where we just postulated there are three parallel, or at least three, maybe more, parallel brains, and this generation leads of its own brain, and only exponentially weakly sensitive to what happens on the other brain. Maybe you need more brains because each particle will have to live on their own brain, so you have a multiple parallel brain structure, and flavor physics, flavors in this picture come out as just geometric, they are similar in all respects except that they live on different brains, and this difference in the Kobayashi-Maskawa matrix element is also becomes geometric, because let's say here you have a Higgs brain, here you have the first one generation brain, this is the second, and this is the third generation brain, this is the Higgs brain, so the closer you are geometrically to the Higgs brain, the larger the overlap, the larger the probably it should be the other way around, the larger the masses are. And the matrix element follows similar pattern. So it's a very appealing picture. It has never been worked out really seriously, but there was a couple of papers, in particular by David Kaplan Jr. and Nelson Student, who tried to see whether the realistic Kobayashi-Maskawa matrix can be generated with this approach, and he came under some plausible assumptions with quite reasonable Kobayashi-Maskawa matrix in very few adjustable parameters. Basically, the parameters here are the distance between various brain and the Higgs brain. So even if you don't believe in this extreme picture, you have to have somehow, in order to ensure that in our world the patterns of the flavor physics are such as they are, you have to somehow separate either the generation separation and other works, lepton brain separated from the baryon brain. So it's some kind of flavor physics is being translated into some kind of geometric notion, geometric substructure inside the brain or multiple brains. Now, as I have just explained to you, this is okay as long as you don't approach the core of the topological defect, because the thickness of the brain remains small, or the substructure inside one fat brain remains well pronounced, distinct. However, as I said, everything tends to delocalize in the perpendicular direction once we start approaching the core of the cosmic string or the core of the monopole. Which means that all this flavor classification and all the pattern of the flavor physics get completely mixed up inside the core of the defect. So basically this defect is a great catalyzer, say, from the mu to E conversion or from the warp to lepton transition. So nothing remains of our familiar flavor physics as long as you can get measurements on the core of these defects. There is very rich ground for all sorts of science fiction here, because if only you can find such an object and somehow bring it close to our field of activities, then you can do all sorts of miraculous things, produce energy virtually from nothing, like decaying protons, produce lots of energy, so all energetic needs of the mankind forever. Rather clean energy because it's in the form of the photon emission or lepton emission, so it would be a great idea, except that of course we don't see so far any traces of this type of topological defects. Now, before I proceed, I have only one couple of transparencies left, so I'm well within my schedule. Before I proceed to the next transparency, let me discuss this issue. The issue of why we don't see, or I mean, what is the historic fate of this cosmic of this topological defects. First of all, as I try to explain, that their existence is practically inevitable, because in within at least any type of scenarios. Because we're within type, with these scenarios, we are always dealing with compact extra dimensions, and in compact extra dimensions, it's almost unavoidable having various topological material cycles. So, this way or that way, you will have the cosmic string or KK string or a cosmic KK monopole of this type if these scenarios are true. Maybe they have nothing to do with reality, this we don't know. As I said yesterday, there is no indications so far that our world is more than four dimensional. It's purely theoretical speculation. But many people find this speculation attractive, appealing, and worthwhile investing time and effort. So let's play this game, and if you play this game, and if you assume that there are that the extra dimensions are in some way compact and they are a non-contractible cycle, which happens virtually in every scenario except Randall's syndrome, and even in some modifications of Randall's syndrome is also true, then you come up with the necessity of such objects to exist. We don't see them in the immediate neighborhood of Earth, so, and we don't see them even far away. Okay, so what they might be historical fate, of course there is this miraculous solution to everybody. You can say that they were quite obviously abundantly produced at the early stages, and then inflation somehow dragged them away beyond the limits of what we can see, and we see and we live inside such a domain of the space-time where there is at most one or a few maybe such topological defects, and then it's hard to find. Probably there is someone somewhere, but it's hard to find. This is, of course, a possibility, but the problem is that I don't know, frankly speaking, I'm not such a great expert in the theory of inflation, but I think that it has to be reconsidered because it's not a standard type. You know, usually when people estimate the density of primordial, say, monopoles or other topological defects, they don't take into account this extra space, the extra coordinates, and then in principle this estimate goes through that inflation might have dragged away all defects except one or two, which is hard to find. I'm not so sure that that's the case in say E type of scenario. If that's the case, then okay, we might say, okay, we are unlucky, there is one cosmic string or monopole of this type, but it's somewhere far away and we don't know how to look for it. Alternative explanation, I mean, if on the other hand an analysis will show that that's not the case, there should be more than one, then if there are too many of them, then this would rule out the ADD type of scenarios or any scenarios with non-trivial cycles of K. Or, if we are lucky, there will be quite a few of them, and in principle, maybe they could be found in the future, and then, of course, this will open totally new technological era. So this aspect was not thoroughly investigated, I should say. Somehow, for some reasons, people just ignored it. Okay, my last by one transparency refers to rather trivial observation, generalizing what I said about cosmic strings. In case, generically, we don't have to have a case with non-trivial cycles such as pi 1 is non-trivial, we may have, say, pi 2 is non-trivial, and in this case, this is the case when K has sphere-like structure, say, for instance, 2 is the simplest example, but again, you don't have to have S2 in order to have pi 2 non-trivial, many poles have pi 2 non-trivial. And in the case, you can repeat the whole argument, except that previously we had only one coordinate on K, this was the position of the brain. You remember why not was the handle variable. It was the position on K, which was S1, and it would have make one rotation aligned with the rotation around in the perpendicular plane when we go along large circle away from some axis. Now, if the non-contractible cycle is such that phi 2 is non-zero, we have two coordinates. Say, for instance, in case of S2, the simplest example, k is equal to S2, the position of the brain on k is now parameterized by two coordinates, theta k and phi k. And now the topological defect, which in this case would manifest itself in our world, is not of the type of the cosmic string, but rather of the type of the monopole. Indeed, you can pick up a point in our three-dimensional space, four-dimensional pool, draw a large sphere far away from the point and identify the polar and azimuthal angle on the large sphere in our world with the polar and azimuthal angle on K, of the point parameterizing the position of the brain on K. And again, consider this is a topologically non-trivial mapping with the topological charge equal to 1. It's one covering. So it's fully analogous to the monopole, except that again it's realized in the Kaluza sort of quote-unquote Kaluza-Klein way. It doesn't have the field whose modulus vary. It doesn't need, in fact, the field, any extra field. It's fully geometrical thing. Again, its existence is only due to the fact that the phi 2 of k is non-trivial. And again, I mean, you can repeat, for instance, in a suitable field theoretical implementation, you can repeat the story and investigate what happens in the core of such a KK monopole. Just like I remind you that in the case of the conical monopole, again, the order parameter in the core of the monopole, the field phi, if you remember, has to go to zero, otherwise the mass of the monopole explodes. So there, the other parameter, there was a field which had its angular orientation and its absolute value, and the absolute value, the length of the phi had to go to zero. Here we don't have this, we only have the angular orientation, which again means that as you approach the core of this quote-unquote KK monopole, you have to delocalize the position of the brain, on which we live entirely, on the manifold K. And again, you can write down a very simple field theoretical realization. It's not unique. By no means I want to imply that the realization is unique, but it's okay because it illustrates everything of the type I presented there. And then you, step by step, you see what happens with this type of a domain wall on K. And again, you see the very same phenomena, the thickness which is defined away from the core of the KK monopole, which is small, becomes larger and larger, the thickness of the domain wall, larger and larger as we go towards the center of the monopole, and then the domain wall have to cover the angular variable have to cover the whole sphere, when we exactly sit exactly in the center of the KK monopole in our four-dimensional space. So again, in this way, this KK monopole is a window in the extra dimension, because once we can send a signal to the center, which is easy to do if only we find it, we send, say, a beam of neurons or whatever, they reach the center, they totally delocalize simultaneously, it's like, you know, proceeding towards the center is simultaneously making delocalization in the extra dimensions. The flavor physics fills up completely, and what was the beam of the muons can go outside as a beam of the electrons, of quarks, or whatever you want. So it's exactly the same phenomenon. So I'm exactly on schedule. I have mass transparency, very brief conclusions. But let me give the last transparency. It's very easy to estimate in both cases, in case of KK cosmic string and in the case of this KK monopole. Again, I should probably emphasize that KK is misleading. In case of the standard Kaluza-Klein quantification, nothing of this type takes place. You have to have a domain wall on a compact manifold. So in this case, it's very easy to estimate the mass of the monopole. It is expressed in terms of the radius of this manifold K in the extra dimension and in terms of the fundamental Planck scale. the fundamental Planck parameter. Planck parameter enters, of course, because again the role of the in the standard polypole monopole is crucial. If you have a photon which is monopole is defined only because you have a flux of the magnetic field. You start from free photons, so to say, two gets masses and one remains massless. So here the gravity plays this role, so it's very easy to estimate the mass of the monopole, and you see that it doesn't need, because this relation between this parameter is more or less arbitrary in Wiesner field theory. I don't know what happens in field theory. Maybe string theories are more restrictive, but if you try to approach the whole thing in the language of field theory, and you can implement any relation between these two parameters, so the mass of the monopole is pretty much a free parameter. You don't have to assume that it's 10 to the 16 GeV or something. You can get whatever you want. Okay, here are my conclusions. Basically, there are two conclusions, or maybe I should say basically this is the upper side of the transparency presents the assumptions rather than conclusions. Basically, there is one conclusion that in all these brain world scenarios where you have non-trivial topology of the extra dimensional space, which is pretty much a typical case for all sorts of compact manifolds, in all these scenarios you will have the new type of Kaluza-Klein effects, which are only possible because our world is a brain on this manifold K. And inside the core of this Kaluza-Klein effects, if you go towards the center of the defect, then the full symmetry, all isometries of K gets restored. And the thickness of the brain totally delocalizes itself from K. That is to say, we totally go to arbitrary point in the extra dimension. If there are fat brains or several parallel brains which Higgs flavor physics in our world, everything gets mixed, and the core of such an effect is a great place to get totally different flavor physics. Thank you.